Okay, we are talking about the bifurcations of nonlinear dynamical systems, and the basic form of the dynamical system is an ordinary differential equation, or a set of ordinary differential equations. Pardon, Kathy? I'm skipping those. Okay, we're starting on slide 31. So, we're trying to understand the bifurcations that occur in nonlinear ordinary differential equations of the form dx dt is some nonlinear function f of x with parameters p. And in the first series of lectures, we looked at the local bifurcations of these vector fields in the neighborhood of steady state solutions. And then we also talked in the last lecture about what I call non-local or global bifurcations. And for the next several lectures, I want to talk about codimension 2 bifurcations. And first of all, we'll kind of summarize what we did in the first set of lectures and then get into a more detailed discussion of these codimension 2 bifurcations. Okay, so if we're talking about local bifurcations, we're talking about the characteristics of the vector field in the neighborhood of a steady state solution of the differential equations. So, of course, a steady state solution is given by the nonlinear algebraic equations f of x and p is equal to zero. Now, remember, by p I mean all the parameters in the differential equation, and x are the variables. So this is a set of algebraic equations in the unknown variables x1 through xn. So it's n equations in n unknowns. And in general, there may be many solutions to the steady state equations. If it's good chemistry, there's at least one steady state solution, but there may be more than one steady state solution. But also, if it's good chemistry, the steady state solutions are isolated. They're separated from each other. And the vector field around the steady state can be characterized by the Jacobian matrix, which is the derivative of these nonlinear functions with respect to the variables evaluated at the steady state. So that's where we start. We start with the steady state equations. And the implicit function theorem says that this set of n equations in n unknowns x and a number of parameters p, that the f of x and p equal to zero, defines a relationship between any two elements of the list of arguments. So I can pick one of the variables, let's just take the first one, and one of the parameters, again we'll take the first parameter, and the steady state equations defines an implicit relationship between one of the variables and one of the parameters. And we can plot that relationship on a Cartesian coordinate system, and we call that a one-parameter bifurcation diagram. It shows us how the steady state level of a variable depends upon a parameter. And we can choose any variable that we want and any parameter that we want. We'll be able to draw this locus. And we're looking for kind of unusual places along this curve where something unusual happens to the nature of the steady states or the vector field. So as we follow a steady state curve in one parameter, we find that certain unusual events might occur on that steady state curve. And the two basic unusual events that we've noticed are saddle node bifurcations and Hopf bifurcations. So at a saddle node bifurcation, as we're following the steady states, we find that, say, a stable node coalesces with a saddle point and the two steady states annihilate each other and disappear as functions of the parameter. So that's called a saddle node bifurcation, and surely there's a big change in the behavior of the dynamical system as you change this parameter P1 and pass through that saddle node bifurcation. The other extreme thing that can happen as you're following a steady state is that the steady state can lose stability at a certain point in the value for the parameter, and say it changes from a stable focus to an unstable focus. So that's called a hop bifurcation. So these are the two fundamental local bifurcations that can happen to steady states in a dynamical system. And they're characterized, these two bifurcations are characterized by the nature of the eigenvalues of the Jacobian matrix evaluated at the steady state. So at a saddle node bifurcation, a real eigenvalue goes to zero and crosses through zero at a saddle node bifurcation. And at a Hopf bifurcation, you have a pair of complex conjugate eigenvalues that cross the imaginary axis. So the real part is equal to zero, but the imaginary part is not equal to zero. So these two bifurcations can be recognized from the behavior of the Jacobian matrix evaluated in the vicinity of the steady state. And that's easy for a computer to do, very straightforward calculations. The computer can always calculate the Jacobian matrix and its eigenvalues and follow the eigenvalues so it can recognize these bifurcation points. So these are called codimension one bifurcation points because to find these points, we have to twiddle one parameter. We have to carefully adjust one of the parameters in the system of differential equations in order to locate the bifurcation point. So it's a codimension one bifurcation point. And again, in general, it usually doesn't matter which variable and which parameter that you choose. You can find a value of the parameter that'll push you through one of these bifurcations. That's not always true. It can be that that one of the parameters won't force you through the bifurcation, but if that doesn't work, choose a different parameter and you're likely to get it with some other parameter. Because these bifurcations are generic bifurcations. They're very robust bifurcations. They don't depend upon very careful issues about how the differential equations are written or how the parameters are defined. Okay, so these are the two major local codimension one bifurcations of dynamical systems. Okay, from a mathematical point of view, now I'm on slide 34, a codimension one bifurcation point is an isolated solution of an extended set of algebraic equations. So, for instance, at a saddle node bifurcation, you have to satisfy the steady state conditions, that f of x and p is equal to zero, that's n equations, and you have to satisfy an additional condition that one of the eigenvalues of the Jacobian matrix is also equal to zero. And the eigenvalues of the Jacobian matrix also depend upon the parameters in the system and the values of the variables at the steady state. So if we put these together, we have n plus 1 equations in n plus 1 unknowns. Those would be the n values of the variables at the steady state and the bifurcation parameter that we've picked out. So we have to now, that'll give us an isolated, distinct value of the bifurcation parameter, where the bifurcation occurs. But we have a number of other parameters floating around in the differential equations, parameters P2, P3, etc. So we can think of these n plus 1 equations as defining an implicit function between any two of the variables or parameters in the list. In the same way that we drew a one-parameter bifurcation diagram, we can construct a two-parameter bifurcation diagram by solving these equations simultaneously. We can do this either for saddle node bifurcations or for Hopf bifurcations. At a Hopf bifurcation, we have a different condition. The additional condition is that the real part of a complex conjugate pair be equal to zero. But it's the same kind of a setup, n plus one equations, and we can use them to define an implicit relationship between two parameters from a list of parameters. So we'll just call them parameters P1 and P2. So we plot this function in two-parameter space, P1 against P2, and the implicit function theorem says you're going to get a curve, and along that curve, the conditions for the one-parameter bifurcation are satisfied. So if we're following a saddle node bifurcation, then in two parameters, we'll get a line called a fold line, and that's the line of saddle node bifurcation in two parameters. Okay? And what happens as you cross a fold line, as you can see in the diagram, as you cross the fold line, a saddle and a node come together and coalesce, and on the other side of the fold line, there's no steady state in the vicinity of those particular steady states because they've annihilated each other. On the other hand, you can follow the conditions for a hop bifurcation in two parameters, and you'll draw some other curve in the parameter space, and right along the curve you have the hop bifurcation, so on one side of the curve, say, you have a stable steady state, and on the other side of the hop curve you have an unstable steady state surrounded by a small amplitude limit cycle. That would be a supercritical hop bifurcation. Okay? Now, just in a one-parameter bifurcation diagram, we follow the steady states in dependence upon a parameter, and we see that some unusual things can occur, and we call those bifurcation points. We do the same thing with these curves in two parameters. We follow the two-parameter bifurcation curve, and unusual things can happen to them. And those are called codimension 2 bifurcations. So, for instance, if we're following a locus of folds of saddle nodes, so now I'm on slide 36, following a locus of saddle nodes, they can come together in what's called a cusp. And it's hard to describe in words, but you see it in the picture. The two fold lines come together in a sharp point. And that sharp point is called a cusp point, sometimes called a cusp catastrophe. And that's a codimension 2 bifurcation point. So it's an unusual event. It's not doesn't look like a regular fold. Something crazy is happening at that cusp point. And that's a codimension 2 bifurcation point because in order to find the cusp, I have to have the freedom to adjust two parameters separately. And they both parameters have to have specific values to find the cusp point. So it's a codimension 2 bifurcation point. And something has failed at the cusp catastrophe, and that something that has failed is a condition for satisfying the implicit function theorem. It's something called a non-degeneracy condition in the vector field that's necessary for defining those folds. And at the cusp point, that non-degeneracy condition is failing to be satisfied, and that's the extra special condition that's satisfied at that codimension 2 bifurcation. Let's ask what can happen if we're following a locus of hop bifurcation. So in the middle two-parameter bifurcation diagram, I'm following a locus of hop bifurcations, and I find, as I follow them, say that the hop bifurcation changes from being a supercritical hop bifurcation to being a subcritical hop bifurcation. And we know what happens when, we know hop bifurcations come in two flavors, super and sub. At a supercritical hop bifurcation, as you cross the bifurcation curve, the steady state becomes unstable and it's surrounded by a stable limit cycle. At a subcritical hop bifurcation, you cross in the opposite direction, and the steady state becomes stable, and it's surrounded by an unstable limit cycle. Okay? And if they come in two different flavors, then there has to be some place where they switch from being supercritical to being subcritical, and that place where they switch is called a degenerate hop bifurcation, and that's also a codimension 2 bifurcation point. And something funny has happened. Some non-degeneracy condition has been broken. And that's the telltale sign of this codimension 2 bifurcation. So I'm just trying to describe to you right now why codimension 2 bifurcations occur, what makes them different from codimension 1 bifurcation, and pretty soon we're going to get to the important question of how do bifurcation diagrams fit together. And what we'll find is that codimension 1 bifurcations kind of snap together with each other at codimension 2 bifurcation points. So that's the direction in which we're leading. So the bifurcation diagrams that I'm drawing here, at least the second and the third ones, are not complete. There are missing pieces to those bifurcation diagrams that we have to add. Okay, so in the middle case, we have a hop bifurcation that's changing from supercritical to subcritical. The limit cycle is changing from a stable limit cycle to an unstable limit cycle. In the last example, I'm following a locus of saddle node bifurcations in two parameters, and I notice that something strange can happen at saddle node bifurcations, because I didn't emphasize this before, but saddle node bifurcations come in two different flavors as well. We usually think of a saddle node as a stable node fusing with a saddle point and disappearing. But it's also possible that an unstable node can fuse with a saddle point and disappear. So those are the two different kinds of saddle node bifurcations, and they're illustrated in this figure. In one region of the parameter space, it's a stable node fusing with a saddle, and in the other region, it's an unstable node fusing with a saddle. And where that switches, where the saddle node changes from being a stable saddle node to an unstable saddle node, that's a codimension 2 bifurcation point. And actually, this bifurcation point can be recognized by looking at the eigenvalues of the Jacobian matrix, and at this bifurcation point, two eigenvalues of the Jacobian matrix are real and equal to zero. So it's called a double zero bifurcation point. It's a codimension 2 bifurcation, because if we're going to satisfy all of these conditions, we need to have 2 degrees of freedom. We need to be able to vary 2 different parameters independently to find that codimension 2 bifurcation point. Okay, you with me so far? You got the basic idea? Now what I want to show you... Yes, Devashish.
What is the difference between the cusp and the double zero?
Okay, the... of the three codimension 2 bifurcations that I've shown here, only the double zero can be recognized by following the eigenvalues of the Jacobian matrix. And at the saddle, the fold line is defined by one eigenvalue being identically equal to zero. But as you're following the fold line, in order to follow the fold line, you have to make sure that lambda 1 is equal to 0, right? That's the condition you're trying to satisfy. But as you follow the fold line, you keep your eye on lambda 2, and you see that lambda 2, the next largest eigenvalue, approaches 0. And right at the bifurcation point, you have two eigenvalues that are equal to 0, okay? And that's an extra condition that has to be satisfied. Okay, in the other two cases, the degenerate hop and the cusp, those can't be recognized by following the eigenvalues of the Jacobian matrix, because nothing funny happens to the eigenvalues of the Jacobian matrix. However, when you describe a saddle node bifurcation or a hop bifurcation, remember what you do. You take the nonlinear differential equations and you expand them in a Taylor series expansion, right? And the linear terms are described by the Jacobian matrix. And then there are nonlinear terms. In particular, the next higher terms are quadratic, okay? And usually what you do, if you look at the proofs of these bifurcations, the proofs always say something has to happen, something cool has to happen to the linear terms, right? An eigenvalue has to equal zero, or something like that has to happen to the linear terms. That's how you recognize the bifurcation. But then there's always a proviso. There's always an extra condition called a non-degeneracy condition, which is phrased in terms of the quadratic term. Some coefficient in the quadratic terms has to be non-zero, or some combination of coefficients has to be non-zero, to make sure that the quadratic terms are big enough to solidify the bifurcation. And if that non-degeneracy condition is not satisfied, then you know something weird happens. So that's what's happening at the cusp and at the degenerate off. Those non-degeneracy conditions are violated. So it's a degenerate bifurcation. So that's why it's called a degenerate hop bifurcation. And a cusp is a degenerate saddle node bifurcation. Another way that mathematicians say it is the vector field is not generic in the region around those bifurcations. And you need an extra parameter to unfold the bifurcation. That's the jargon of the mathematicians. Okay? So we'll find that, in general, some of these codimension 2 bifurcations are characterized by extra eigenvalues being 0 at the bifurcation, and others are satisfied by, are defined by breaking these non-degenerate conditions. Okay. So, slide 37. Loci of non-local bifurcations can also undergo codimension 2 bifurcations. So remember, a non-local bifurcation, the ones we've met so far are cyclic fold bifurcations and homoclinic bifurcations. A cyclic fold bifurcation is when a stable limit cycle and an unstable limit cycle come together and coalesce and annihilate each other. And that's recognized by, what is it, a Floquet multiplier going through +1 on the unit circle. But remember, to calculate Floquet multipliers, you have to integrate the differential equations around the limit cycle. So it's not a local bifurcation. It's a non-local bifurcation. But nonetheless, auto and other bifurcation software are able to monitor the Floquet multipliers, and they're able to follow cyclic fold bifurcations. Let's put it that way. So you can ask auto to follow a cyclic fold bifurcation, and as it traces it out in two parameters, you'll often see cyclic fold bifurcations going through cusps. In the same way that saddle nodes are folds of steady states, and cyclic folds are folds of periodic solutions, and they can have cusp catastrophes, which are non-generic codimension 2 bifurcations. They're not so important. You should just recognize them when you see them. More important are the codimension 2 bifurcations that occur on homoclinic orbits. So remember, a homoclinic orbit, like a saddle loop, is an orbit that goes from a saddle point, goes out from the saddle point, goes around and comes back to the saddle point. That's a codimension 1 bifurcation. And as you move across that bifurcation, you create either a stable limit cycle or an unstable limit cycle. So there are two kinds of saddle loop bifurcations, depending upon whether the large amplitude limit cycle is stable or unstable. And just like when you follow hop bifurcations, you can pass through degenerate hops where the stability of the limit cycle changes. The same thing happens along a homoclinic or a saddle loop bifurcation. You can change from bifurcating a stable limit cycle to bifurcating an unstable limit cycle, as described in the figure. Okay? And that point where it changes from being stable to unstable is a kind of degenerate saddle loop bifurcation. And it's a codimension 2 bifurcation. Okay, you with me? Now,